button, he would do it. Which, in a sense, and I never saw the guy hit anybody, okay? But he let you know that, hey, don't dig in on me, because...
It was possible, yes.
Oh, yeah, he was a tough Indian, you know. He really was. I think the Cleveland staff amazed me more than anything else, rather than just thinking about one pitcher. I like Whitey Ford an awful lot because Whitey was the kind of guy that had a very large ego for not a very big man, and if you crushed his ego a little bit, whatever, then you could get the best of him. So, but everybody had parts of being what everybody would like to be, one of the best pitchers, you know.
Sure.
I thought Mel Parnell was a hell of a pitcher.
Yes, he was.
He was not a very big man, and he pitched in a tough ballpark with Boston and won 20-some ball games 2-3 years in a row, I'm sure. And in that ballpark, that's a tough ballpark for a left-handed pitcher.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He has, I think he won like 70% of his games, of his decisions, in Fenway Park, which is unbelievable.
Yeah, it really is. So there were a lot of good pitchers, and I never really thought of one. Yeah, I think what happens is that I couldn't compare myself with those people because I felt like I wasn't on their level. But what you do is that you say to yourself, hey, what about the best hitter you ever pitched against? Well, in my theory, I thought Williams was probably the greatest hitter I ever pitched against, although there were a lot of real good hitters. And one guy that I only pitched against a few times because we only played him in spring training was Musial. But he was an entirely different type of hitter than Ted. Ted was this kind of hitter. He said, hey, I don't give a damn if you put 12 guys on the field. If I hit the ball good, you're not going to catch it anyhow. And he proved it. And he was the kind of guy, well, when he hit 400, he could have been removed that last ball game. And what did he do? Christ, he went out and got 4 or 5 hits the last day or something.
Yeah, 6 for 8, I think, in the doubleheader, 5 for 8,
yeah,
something like
doubleheader,
that.
Doubleheader, that's right.
Yeah.
Got 6 base hits in the doubleheader. But he was that kind of guy. And had he not been called over to Korea, God knows how great he would have been.
Oh, I think that, what did he miss? He must have missed 5 years between World War II and Korea.
Yeah, he missed a lot of good years.
That's at least 150 home runs, another 500 or 600 RBIs.
Right out of the center of when he was hitting the ball real, real good.
Yeah, it's I guess scares you to think what he might have done. Who did you say the best hitter he was? Who was the best all-around ball player?
Oh, boy. Well, I didn't play with Joe that much, to be frank with you. He quit in 51, and I saw him in the tail end of his career. But when I first went up in 49, in 1949, I thought he was the greatest ball player I ever saw.
Mm-hmm.
He made everything look so easy. He had a great arm, even though he didn't look like he could run. He ran real well. He played the hitters so well. I remember one time pitching against Cleveland, and Larry Dober was a good low ball hitter. And I threw him a sinker, and he hit the hell out of the ball to center field. And I turned around and thought, oh, my God, you know. And Joe just ran and ran and ran and stopped and turned around and hit his glove with his hand and caught the ball. And I said, my God, you know. I played with a lot of guys who were good outfielders, but they made plays look a lot tougher than they really were. Or maybe that was their style of catching them. I don't know. Joe just made it look so easy that I thought basically base running, throwing, hitting, feeling, he was probably one of the greatest ball players that I saw. But I only saw him that short period of time when he was really playing good ball.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he admitted that the slider was his downfall. He said, I can't hit that goddamn thing. He said, I think it's a fastball, and he said, I can't pick the sucker up, and he said, I'm just not going to play anywhere.
I bet 10 years earlier he'd have adjusted to it, better, but as far as all-around ability, nobody could have topped him.
Well, and Joe didn't have the best ballpark to hit in.
That's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, God almighty, the left center field fence was 9 miles in center field. You couldn't hit the ball out of the center field. Even Mantle couldn't hit the ball out of center field.
Mm-hmm.
And he hit the longest balls I ever saw. I think Mick could have been one of the greatest all-around ball players, but he had some problems. He had bad legs.
Mm-hmm.
He was so muscular that he used to pull muscles in his legs, and he'd tape himself before the ball game so that he wouldn't pull muscles, and he couldn't steal a bases because he had a I think it was osteomyelitis or something. If he broke a leg, he might lose it.
Mm-hmm.
And things of that nature. So I think he could have been and should have been one of the greatest all around, but he just had problems and couldn't go all out. But it sure was a hell of a ball. And I'll be very frank with you, he tore me up pretty good.
He tore a lot of fellas up.
Well, I like to pitch him away. And even though, you know, he could not hit that ball up and in. I mean, if you could hum that ball up a little up and in, you strike him out a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And the guys that could throw that ball hard up and in could strike him out. Well, I tried, but I couldn't, and it was dangerous. If I missed a little bit, it was adios.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that out in a hurry. I think when he broke in, he probably hit his second home run off me, or what, maybe it was the first, I don't know. But anyhow, I pitched him low and away, and he used to hit those little line drives or one-hop line drives back to the box and just kill me. I was always knocking them down or trying to knock them down or get the hell out of the way or something.
You know, one of your teammates, J.W. Porter, told me that 1956, Mickey Mantle was the best ball player in the history of the sport.
Well, I think that what happens is that in each ball player, they see something that they really admire. And maybe it's just that one year, or maybe it's just that one series that they see them. And of course, they know that they're playing good ball anyhow. But they'll do things. That's why I said Joe. I saw Joe do things in 1949 I've never seen any ball player do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, line drives a hit over second base, and he's coming in and catching him off his shoe stops. And the next ball is hit 455 or 460 feet to center field, and he turns around and waits for the ball. And those kind of things, just, you know, you wonder, hey, what the hell is this guy? And you watch him run. He was no Willie Mays, you know, as far as running is concerned, but he was a lot faster than he looked. He was a loafer, but he covered ground, and he played the game so instinctively well that anybody that says that there was a better ball player, you know, I'd have to see him.
Yeah. I didn't see him. I was too young. But from what I've heard, he had to be an amazing thing. Talk about hitting. You hit a home run.
Yeah.
You remember it?
One, yeah.
What was the situation?
We're in Philadelphia. And I think the pitcher was Mario Peretti.
Yeah, old Coast League player.
No big name, no more than I was. We're both playing for bad ball clubs. And he threw me a fastball right down the middle with two strikes on me, and I just swung. I hit the ball as good as I ever hit it, and I hit it up in the upper deck. And the nice thing about it was that at that time my father never really had much opportunity to see me play because he was playing.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what happened was that there was a game of the day on a Saturday, and God knows why the Browns and the Athletics got on the game of the day. I guess they had to put somebody on at that particular time, and he happened to see that ball game. Yeah, where I hit the home run.
That was exciting.
And so that made me feel really good. I mean, I wasn't the proudest guy in the world. I hit one home run in my whole life. I didn't even hit any in the minor leagues. I hit some in winter ball, but but that's all.
Well, it's something to tell the grandkids about. In your career, did you save souvenirs?
No, I didn't.
You weren't a collector?
No, and my wife would would sometimes make me bring home the newspaper when I pissed a ball game in that particular park. And she tried to save a few things, but we were just going through it this last before Christmas, and I thought maybe that all the clippings that we had had, some of them we got lost. We were in a flood in '49, '48 when I was with Portland, and we had a lot of the things that I had. She had saved from college. I met her in college. College and semi-pro ball and stuff like that. A lot of it got so wet that she couldn't save it. She did save some. But anyhow, what we have are a few here and there, and so she said, well, let's put it together in a scrapbook, and maybe your grandkids will know who you were. And so we started doing that. We haven't finished it yet, but before I leave this earth, I suppose I'll get it done.
Well, that's good. The clippings are nice. Even if they aren't organized, they're there. Somebody can go through them.
Yeah.
Where'd you go to college?
University of Santa Clara.
Mm-hmm.
Right here.
Yeah, I know Santa Clara.
San Jose.
Yeah.
And one of the best colleges in the world. In fact, I when I came back, I spent 14 years on the Board of Fellows for them.
Oh, boy. What kind of degree do you have?
I didn't complete college. The service came along, and I got married when I was in the service, and when I started pro ball, my second child was born in spring training. So I had two children and a wife to take care of my first year in pro ball. So I never got a chance to go back.
Makes it pretty tough. Bill Renner says that Santa Clara is the greatest school in the world, too.
Well, I see Bill all the time. He's a great guy.
He is. I interviewed him. It's been a long time ago, 2 years at least. He was just going in for surgery. How did that go?
Oh, it's fine. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. In fact, a lot of us got together. Don Larson had his 35th, I guess, anniversary for his perfect ball game.
Right.
And he had it down in Gilroy. And there must have been 300 people there anyhow.
Wow.
And probably in the neighborhood of 100 ball players. And, yeah, what was really wonderful was that we walked into they had an Elks Club. And I walked in, and Charlie Severo, who was my catcher in Portland and with the Yankees and things of that nature, and Charlie and I are pretty good buddies. He is standing next to this gentleman, and he says, hey, D, he says, you recognize this guy? Hold on just a minute.
Okay.
I've got to call, and I'll tell him I'm on. I walked in, and it was Jim Turner.
Oh, yeah?
The pitching coach, and he's 88 years old.
I was going to say, he's got to be up there.
And I'll be willing to bet you that the guy looked as good as most. Well, I think he looked as good as I did, to be honest with you. And hell, I'm not 70 yet. You know?
Yeah.
And just, it was wonderful to see him. Jim was my manager for 2 years, and also pitching coach when I was with the Yankees. And I really admired him. I thought he was a great, great guy and a great pitching coach. Anyhow, we ran into, Hank Bauer was there, and Tommy Hendrick was there, and Moose Scourin was there, and, we must have had 10 or 12, I guess, ex-Yankees from the area. Renner wasn't there. Bill was there. That's right. I'm sorry. Bill Renner was there. I was thinking he was up the river. He's got a place up the Russian River. Anyhow, it was great to see those guys. And quite honestly, at that time I saw Bill, and he said that the operation wasn't bad at all. He went through it real easy.
Good.
Yeah. And he's a hell of a guy.
I liked him. Very nice fellow. Really tells it like it is.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed speaking with him very much. Trevor Silvera is a fellow I wanted to interview very much. I wrote him, and he said that he doesn't doesn't do interviews with somebody he doesn't know, which is probably safe.
Huh.
But I was a fan of his too when I was a kid. Do you get much fan mail today?
Oh, I
you mentioned it from the Browns days.
I average about maybe 10, 12 a month. About every other day.
Are they autograph requests?
Pardon?
Are they all autograph requests?
Yeah. Yeah, they send the cards, they send whatever if they don't have a card. Some even ask for pictures. Hell, I ran out of pictures years ago. but I do have some reprints. Topps did a reprint, and when they did that, they sent me like 50 or 60 reprints. So if they don't have one, if they send it just a card or they want a picture or something of this nature, I'll send them one of the reprints.
That's nice.
That's the top card. I tried it. Why not? I mean, I'm thankful that they want my autograph, that they remember me. You know?
Yeah, it's nice to be remembered.
Sure it is.
You may or may not remember. It's been several years ago. The SEALs camera day. I took a picture of you, and I found it. I'd stuck these things away, when the kids were interested in baseball, I'd looking through, see what I had left, and I had these pictures. I sent you two copies of it. Told you to keep one and to sign the other one, send it back to me. Do you recall that by any chance?
Sure, I sure do.
Yeah, that was. I've got the one. My son looked at it and said, "Who is he?" I didn't expect to have any idea. And I said, "That was." His favorite was a Gary Carter. I said, that was the Gary Carter of the mid-1950s. Never heard of him, but that's beside the point. I would expect of a kid. Do you have any regrets from your career?
Oh, I don't think so. I wish to God that... I suffered a number of injuries that set me back, you know. Everybody wishes that they hadn't gotten hurt, for instance. In my first year, I pulled a groin muscle in the playoffs at Montreal when I was at Newark. And they were taking five or six of us up. Rashi was on our ball club, and Yogi was on our ball club, and Jerry Coleman, and Frank Coleman, an outfielder. They were taking us up for the last, you know, the last few weeks of the season. And I pulled this groin muscle, and they taped, and I pitched the last game again. And when I did, I injured it so badly that I couldn't go up. And that was my regret. I think it kind of slowed me down. So a few of the injuries probably were my regrets. Hold on a second.
Okay.
I'm with you.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm receiving phone calls right now because I'm the secretary of our golf club.
Oh, okay.
We play on Wednesdays. They're all checking with me, so that's why we're getting phone calls.
Well, I told you this would
right
take...
Because I got everybody set up.
Okay, I told you it would take 20 minutes, and I think we're running close to an hour.
I'm sorry I talked so long.
No, that's great. I'm really enjoying it. Let me ask you one more question, then, and we'll end it. Would you do this again?
Sure.
Okay, good.
I don't know what else I can tell you. I mean, let me tell you, my memory's not the greatest in the world, although we do remember some of the things 30 or 40 years ago. Well, we don't remember what the hell happened last week.
I know that feeling.
But it's been nice talking to you. Do you want to call me again? Sure.
Wayne, thank you. Let me ask you, this has nothing to do with the interview now. Do you want to read this before I submit it to the magazine?
I don't think so, but if you want to send me a copy before you send it, that's fine. It isn't necessary. I'm not worried about what you're going to write.
Well, you've said nothing that's the least bit derogatory in any way, shape, or form. I may do it anyhow. I feel safer. I don't want to be accused of misquoting anybody.
Well, what I'm saying is this, that basically... if before it goes to print you want to send me something, fine, but unless it's something blatant, I can't think of anything that I would have said that I would retract.
But you
know, and I'm not worried about what you seem to be very thorough about everything, but if you want to send me something before it's in print, I'd appreciate it.
I will. I would feel better. And do you want some copies of the magazine after it's printed?
Oh, yes, I'd like to. Yes.
Okay, how many would you like?
I'd like to hand out one or two, maybe, to my kids. Anyhow.
Okay. Larry Jansen evidently was very fertile. I think he had like 48 kids. He wanted one for each of them. And
he's up in that cold weather where there isn't much else.
I guess so. but the editor didn't seem to mind. I've requested, I think he ended up wanting 12, and I've requested as many as that. So just tell me what number you'd like, and we'll...
Okay, 5 or 6 is fine.
Okay, great. We'll do it. Thank you very much. I really appreciate your time, and... as I said, when I was a kid, you were one of the greatest things that I thought ever was. Maybe your record doesn't show that, but I sure thought you were.
That makes me feel
And I've really enjoyed this. And I'll get, as soon as it'll take me 5 or 6 days to type it up, and I'll send you a copy before I send it off.
Fine.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Good night. Now.